Brexit and what it means for the information industry. Could I just have a signal from someone that you can hear me?
Yeah, Lee, it's Simon. I can hear you perfectly clearly.
Perfect. Perfect. Great. I'm Lee Watson-Healy, and as Chief Analyst at Outsell, I lead our activities in producing research and advisory for the media and information industry and act as an advisor to senior executives in the industry. I'd like to introduce today's presenter, Hugh Logue, political and regulatory markets and the geopolitical and impact our industry. Hugh is also a barrister and a member of the bar in England and Wales. Simon Alterman, our lead analyst, focused on company and market performance and trends and strategy across the information. Simon serves as analyst and consultant to the CEOs and Outsell's leadership community. Both Hugh and Simon are based in the UK. A recorded version of this webinar will be made available after our session today, and there's a short slide deck visible through the Adobe Connect. We'd love to hear from you, so please do log on so you can see the slides, and we will be using the chat feature to moderate questions and discussion. We're going to share our brief presentation for the first 10 or 15 minutes, and then we'll open up to Q&A and discussion because we really want to make this interactive. For those of you just joining us, welcome to today's session. Please do log in to Adobe Connect and dial in to the Arkadin phone number at the very beginning is on the Arkadin conference line. And Alisa, would you please key that in for people again so they can see the audio? We tee up questions and discussion based on what comes from you through the chat feature. Welcome again. We are in a period of monumental upheaval due to the Brexit referendum results, and today we're here to share Outsell's views on scenarios for what might happen next, how our infected actions we recommend, and engage in questions and discussion with you about what you are seeing and planning. So to begin, over to Hugh. Next slide.
I'll just wait for the other people to join. So last week on turnout of 72% did by EU, David Cameron then announced that he will resign as Prime Minister ahead of the Conservative Party conference in October. A new Conservative leader is expected to be in place by the 9th of September. The Governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, went on to say that the Bank of England has extensive contingency plans and that he's ready to provide more than a billion of additional funds to help. However, there are still enormous uncertainties surrounding Brexit. The UK has yet to formally announce that it wants to leave the UK. In the medium term, the UK model for a future UK-EU relationship is unknown, and it's difficult to predict the longer term until they are negotiated, but we will have uncertainty until the end of 2018. Next slide, please. Now, before we get into what would look like outside the EU, it's worth noting that we are still some way away from Brexit. There are a few things that could still keep Britain within the EU. So in the UK is sovereign, and given a free vote ahead of Article 50 being invoked, it might decide that it's in the UK's national interests to go against the referendum result or set difficult conditions for the negotiation that caused the... But sooner or later, a general election will be held. It's likely that Article 50 will be invoked after the election, and if a coalition government of pro-European parties is returned to the Commons, the government would have a democratic mandate for the UK remaining in the EU. All that said, the rest of this presentation assumes that sooner or later there will be a general election, which the Conservative Party will win under a Brexit manifesto pledge. Next slide, please. So there are three main scenarios for trade after for Brexit. joining the European Economic Area, a bilateral EU-UK agreement, and world trade. Joining the European Economic Area, the UK could negotiate new entry treaty into the EEA and would also require joining the EFTA. It would have similar economic relationship with the EU, but without agricultural, fisheries, some judicial affairs, foreign affairs, and other policies. The UK would still have to abide, though, by the EU's four freedoms of goods and capital. The UK would still have to pay in to the EU budget and apply the single market rules and regulations without having a vote on them. The UK would not benefit from free trade agreements that the EU has negotiated with other parts of the world. So in summary, the UK keeps EU rents, but the relative stability that the EEA lessens the risk for businesses overall. The bilateral EU-UK agreement, the EU treaties do not authorize currently that the UK could remain in the form of half membership of the EU. That would need to be ratified by all 28 states and is extremely unlikely to happen. So the next Prime Minister would need to take the UK out of the EU by invoking Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty, either before or after the next general election. The UK Parliament may be given a vote on the issue, although there are differing views as to whether there's a legal requirement for this to happen. Westminster would also need to reject an independence referendum from Scotland and for Northern Ireland. The two-year ticking clock 50 puts the negotiating power heavily in favour of the remaining EU states. The remaining EU states are likely to play hardball to prevent contagion to the other countries. So the UK leaves whether or not a deal is reached. Or if it reaches a poor deal for the UK. So in summary, the UK's weak negotiating position could result for a bad deal for businesses. And then the final scenario that we have laid out here is the World Trade Organization's rules. So agreement with the EU is reached. The UK could trade under WTO rules. Now, WTO limits maximum tariffs countries can apply to trade goods. There will be new customs controls, possibly including the Republic of Ireland. It could result in tariffs on EU companies producing components in the UK, but then sending those for assembly to another member state. So this would have particularly adverse effects, for example, for the car industry. The free trade agreements negotiated by the EU with non-EU states would need to be re-ratified by the UK. And these non-EU countries would then have more negotiating power because they would only be negotiating for access to the UK market and not the whole EU. And it puts us in a situation, puts the UK in a situation where it becomes vulnerable to non-tariff barriers and old-fashioned protectionism. So in summary, this is back to basics. But we could end up here if the negotiation process goes horribly wrong. Now, I will hand over to my colleague, Simon, who will in practice for the information industry.
So I think, Lee, you're going to take over at this stage, yeah?
Well, just a few words I would add, just to kind of bring the picture toward our industry. Ultimately, global economic instability is the single biggest threat here from all the uncertainties. And it also seems clear that we are edging toward recession. You know, the seven-year cycle is really coming back around, and we are seeing trouble ahead with venture capital money flows dropping and increased focus on profits rather than revenue, and attention shifting to what businesses are economical and which ones are not. And so combined with Brexit, all of those factors plus Brexit, we look to be in for a rough sledding, and no surprise. And yet some areas like law and risk are likely to see opportunities. other segments may struggle a bit more, and I know everyone has received a link to the kind of more detailed summary of effects that we predicted for different segments of the industry. So I won't dive in too much into that here, other than to say we do see opportunities ahead, and I'd like to turn to Simon to lead that next part of our discussion. And everyone, please be thinking about the kinds of questions and discussion you want to have here, because we will very shortly open it up for interaction with all of you that have joined us today. Simon?
Thank you, Lee. So there are a few short-term opportunities. One of our clients told us this was going to be an absolute bonanza for consultants and lawyers, and it's hard to disagree with that. Both you and I spent many years in Brussels, and they did very well out of the whole rulemaking and legislation process in Brussels during that time. And during times of enormous change, I was there when the 1992 Single Market Program was underway, where the lobbying and consultancy industry first grew up in Brussels, and certainly a change of this magnitude to the arrangements between a member state such as the UK and the rest of the European Union is going to create a lot of advisory opportunities on all kinds. Tracking the changes, the scale of the legislation and regulation framework that needs to be renegotiated is really quite colossal. Short-term opportunities relating to the economic instability, which is the degree of which is so far uncertain but is very real. We noticed one major credit company, for example, offering free credit reports until as a sort of promotional thing until the end of July to try and capitalize on the fact that people were very uncertain what the outlook would be for individual companies. And there may also be some opportunities for acquisitions in the UK. Sterling has recovered somewhat, but and the currency markets are notoriously unpredictable and driven by many other things. But to the extent that the pound is likely to stay relatively weak for a prolonged period until the picture becomes clearer, assets denominated in sterling will look cheap to buyers from other currencies. So that's something that people might want to be looking for. So what does that mean in terms of what people should be thinking about doing? Well, not everyone is in a position to deal with this kind of currency volatility, but certainly to the extent that one can, matching the currencies of revenues and costs to the greatest degree possible, hedging where appropriate, some form of protection is essential to adjust prices all the time to keep up with currency weakness. Clients usually expect that if the prices are going to go up when the currency is weak, it'll go down when the currency is strong, and that rarely happens. We should also assume that UK economic activity in particular will slow down to some degree. As Lee's already mentioned, these were not particularly easy times in the global economy. A lot of the previously fast-growing emerging economies are slowing down for various reasons. China voluntarily, Russia oil-induced, Brazil with its bad problems. The Eurozone is still fragile, although had been recovering somewhat. And the UK's recovery had begun to falter a little bit, and few independent analysts expect that this will have anything other than a negative impact, and certainly in the short term. Finally, it's worth bearing in mind that nothing has actually changed from a legal perspective since last Thursday. The UK remains a member of the European Union. The legal model hasn't changed. An EU national seeking work in the UK is free to come, and vice versa. Therefore, it's worth considering what changes companies might want to bring forward, given the uncertainty, particularly around the employment status. Immigration was such a large factor in the referendum. It seems very unlikely that any UK government would be able to agree terms of departure that didn't guarantee some greater controls on migration within the European Union or from EU nationals, but none of that applies until now. Equally hard to see that the UK will be engaged in a program of removing people who are already lawfully in the country. In the longer term, the question of where companies will site their operations serving the EU market clearly is back on the agenda. That very much will depend on what kind of market access is agreed. It is more likely that physical goods will be have better access than services, and certainly there are clearly some EU countries that would like to take advantage of this to make it a little harder for some of the UK's more competitive services to have access to their markets. So for anybody who's been using the UK as a base to serve Europe, will need to consider and keep a close eye on how those things are developing. There are obviously a number of market sectors in the UK which are heavily dependent on the EU relationship and will be undergoing some fairly dramatic change. One only needs to think, for example, of farming and the whole apparatus for agricultural subsidies and the way that industry works, scientific research, which is heavily dependent on Europe-wide research funding and so on. And anybody operating in those markets will need to be taking a very close look at that. And as I've just mentioned, financial services, it's no secret that there is a resentment in the Eurozone in some quarters to the predominant position of the City of London, even in euro-denominated activity, and many players there will be looking to see whether this is an opportunity to try and strengthen centres such as Paris and Frankfurt at London's expense, and we're already seeing some signs of financial institutions relocation of activities at this stage. So plenty to think about, but as Hugh said at the outset, none of this will become clear until at least the end of 2018. And the most important questions, as in every EU negotiation I've ever witnessed, will not be decided until right at the end. And those particularly concern the location of people and market access. Lee.
All right. Thank you, Simon. Now, let's hear from all of you, and it's certainly our hope to make this an interactive discussion rather than us standing up here and just talking to all of you. We've got a couple of questions already teed up from Liz, and so I'd like to start there. And Liz, if you'd like, you can press star 1 to unmute your phone and let us hear directly from you, and then Simon and Hugh can address the questions you've posed. Ah, Liz doesn't have a microphone. So Simon and Hugh, if you take a look, Liz is wanting to understand a bit more about where we think business might be bad, perhaps within the UK as well as outside, and then Simon need a further explanation of why multinationals using the UK as a hub for Europe needs to make a change.
Well, the first point, I think, is relatively straightforward. The greater the dependence on access to international markets, the more likely a business based in the UK is likely to be affected by this. That's on the overall picture relating to the relationship with the European market. There's the wider question of that applies in any economic downturn, of which sectors are badly affected, and we're already seeing some signs, for example, in the UK property market, which arguably was long overdue for a correction anyway, with some the contradictory forces of a weaker pound making it a little bit more attractive for some buyers perhaps, but a lot of nervousness about the overall outlook and some sense. I heard anecdotally walking past an estate agent a couple of days ago, I heard a rather exasperated looking agent on her mobile phone and saying, nothing's happening. Everybody's saying they're going to wait 6 months before they even think about buying a house. So it's clearly general economic downturn will affect all the sectors that always are affected. As to your question about multinationals, I think we need to separate what we might call business operations from the market access kind of things. Business operations, clearly personnel type issues, the location of staff. But it's also important to remember that the access to the single market is not just about tariffs. The most important reason why the EU created the single market was because there were all kinds of standards and national restrictions on what could and couldn't be legally sold. And the success of the single market is the minimum set of standards across so many areas of economic activity, which if a country meets those standards, guarantee access to every other country without those countries having to approve the product or service a second time. Something legally produced and sold in the UK can be sold in France or Germany or Latvia without any further approval. And that's what's going to be lost unless a new agreement or until a new agreement is put in place. And that's why car manufacturers, for example, in the UK will say, well, that's fine, we can still export from here, but Europe will be making standards that we won't necessarily have a part in be involved in any shape or form in determining, and yet we will have to meet those standards if we want to carry on selling our cars into those markets. And that will apply across many industries.
And Simon, I'd add to that that even if the UK does end up in the EEA along the similar model as Norway, there's special rules that prevent a sort of backdoor for international companies from setting up in Norway and then exporting their goods into the EU without any tariffs. So it's called the rules of origin. And in Norway, if a Norwegian firm exports a product with significant content in that product from non-EU countries, then tariffs are added to that. And that isn't currently the case with the UK that has full EU membership at the moment. So there's these backdoor, well, it's designed to prevent a backdoor entry into the EU market, and it could be potentially a problem for non-EU countries.
Thanks, Hugh. Another question, perhaps. I can see Ivan is typing. Do you have a question, Ivan? Anybody who has a question could type something in the chat box on the button. Okay, I see Ivan just made a point on in regard to something I just said. There's a difference, of course, between standards. Ivan is from BSI, and he's pointing out he's not speaking on behalf of BSI, but he makes the point that there's a difference between standards, and clearly the global standard-setting process doesn't change, and European regulations, which set rules governing a whole series of areas. Sometimes those regulations refer to standards, to internationally agreed standards, and sometimes they don't. But clearly the UK's role in the standard setting process is not by EU leaving the European Union per se.
And as Simon said, a major obstacle will be the free movement of people. If that doesn't come in with the new negotiations, then companies that have also offices in London in future could have staff from one to the other.
Okay. See, Liz, is there any prospect that the decision, the referendum decision, will not be actually followed through on, and the UK will remain part of the EU? Well, extraordinary times, and Hugh's outlined some of the parliamentary complications that could arise, but our view would be that it would be wrong to plan on anything other than a central assumption that the UK is going to leave the European Union. And one only has to listen to what prominent members of the Conservatives, for example, who were on the Remain side of the argument are now saying about what they will have to do to make clear that the focus is likely to be very much on implementing this rather than trying to find a way to get out of it. Gail Gorbett asks if the UK will be outside the new EU digital single market after Brexit. Hugh, do you want to have a word about that?
So we're talking about the Privacy Shield, and we're talking about our, and I was talking on a platform with Gail a couple of weeks ago at the Law Society. I think from what the Data Commissioner in the UK has said is that whether or not we have Brexit, they still plan to put in place all the policies for the GDPR, and that Privacy Shield, of course, as you know, is really a stopgap in many ways until the full GDPR comes in. So if the UK wants to trade with the EU on a like-for-like basis, then it will need to have the GDPR regulations in place to have those trade agreements. So I don't think that in practice that the GDPR is not going to come in because of Brexit. And on a timetable basis, by a few months, the GDPR will come in ahead of Brexit. Even if Brexit was initiated today, it would still maybe take 2 years, and the GDPR is due to come in just under 2 years. So whether there might be a decision on as to stall its entry to see whether or not UK goes out on Brexit, but as it currently stands, it's still going to come in.
Anna asks about any changes in the legal aspects associated with selling information abroad. Information services are subject to all the questions of personal data and privacy and all those kinds of things, distance selling and e-commerce regulations as well. And once again, we know what the framework is for all of those things today. We don't know how much of that will remain in place, in the sense that the UK agrees to respect EU rules or something comparable. So it would be certainly possible that none of that will change, but it's by no means guaranteed, because leaving the European Union means leaving every single existing piece of governing law until it's replaced or covered by something like the European Economic Area. And Gail, I think the previous answer probably covers some of what you're asking as well. Outside the European Union, the UK would have no role in negotiating what the EU calls the digital single market. It may agree to some of the provisions. It may decide that it has no choice but to agree to some of the provisions, but it would have no formal role in that, and it may decide just to try to strike individual deals on particular topics. Again, we have to assume that if the UK leaves the European Union, that it doesn't automatically carry on with anything that is currently under negotiation or in place.
Yes, I think so. The digital single market, the EU is going to be going ahead with that, with or without the UK. But if the UK does want to trade with the EU, then it will be one of the many regulations that it will have to sign up to anyway.
We have a question from Ivan. Any potential impact on Horizon 2020, the Open Access Initiative? I'm wondering, is Joe McShay on the line by any chance from OutSell? not sure if Joe is here.
She's joining.
I wish Joe were here with us because I'd have her speak directly to it. She looks at the open access initiatives very carefully. Although we were chatting a bit earlier this morning and really not anticipating any downside for open access initiatives in general. In fact, openness is going to be even more needed potentially as there's some closing going on. So I'll get her to give us a specific answer to that question, Ivan. But I think if she were here with us, she would be saying no, not anticipating any real impact. Thank you, Rory, for pointing out Richard Poynders has an extensive discussion there on his blog from this morning. What other questions do we have? I would love it if people want to just open up and share some of what you're seeing, actions you're taking. Are there moves that you're making to move on opportunities? Obviously, not to proprietary information, but would love to hear from anyone that would like to just share kind of how you're thinking about the challenges of the moment. Anyone game? Do we have other questions? I think we're about to hear from Zoe, and Zoe would welcome if you just want to unmute your phone and talk. Anyone who has something to say, you can press star one, and we'll have at it. Hugh, it might be good to elaborate a little bit on what you see going on as the upside opportunities in legal and risk and compliance to be opportunities for organizations that participate in that space.
Yes, so there's two advantages here. First of all, as Simon had mentioned, the currencies get easier to acquire companies, and there is a number of independent legal and regulatory businesses that could be potentially acquired. They are going to have to go through a range of changes, and the lawyers are going to be looking for guidance and looking for information from information providers. This is likely to go on for a decade when you think about all the work there is after Brexit, not just before Brexit. So we have 10 years here of legal uncertainty and opportunities for those legal and regulatory solution providers. Now, there's a number of American publishers that haven't actually moved into the European or UK markets or haven't done so significantly. So that could be play to their advantage. And it's not just going to be it's content that's going to doesn't have to, but is likely to originate from the UK, given that the local lawyers and in the UK will have quite a bit of expertise in this matter. But it is content that will be served around the world to any market that currently trades with the EU. So that creates the advantage of employing experienced editorial teams that have built up the relationships with local barristers and law firms locally to create content. And it also has the advantage of the weaker sterling, if that carries on, makes them slightly more affordable than they perhaps were a year or two ago, or even a week or two ago.
Yeah. Thank you, Hugh. Simon, do you want to tackle Zoe's question about academic libraries and the impact?
Yeah. Zoe points out that academic library budgets in the UK are already under pressure and wondered what impact this will have. Probably two contradictory forces here, as in so much of this situation. On the one hand, we mentioned the funding for scientific research, which and other academic work, which is done on a European level. Now, in one way, some of it is UK money that goes to Europe and comes back again. But as in so many of these spending areas, there's no guarantee that a future UK government would carry on funding at the same level. And we're all aware, those of us who live in the UK, of the extreme financial pressures that there have been on higher education in recent years. So from that perspective, it may make the situation hard. And many institutions have been raising a lot of money from overseas students. Under EU law, EU citizens had to be treated in exactly the same way as, different in England and Scotland, but let's just call it shorthand UK citizens as far as access to higher education was concerned. The UK could choose to say, no, well, in future you're going to have to pay the higher fees that students from China and the United States are paying. So that could be good for finances, but as in all of these things, if the UK says it wants to do that, then the rest of Europe will impose the same restrictions on UK students heading in their direction.
Thank you, Simon. Zoe, any reaction? What other questions do we have? What else would you like to know while Zoe's giving us her take? All right. You, Simon, anything else? Seems as if we're coming up to the end of our questions for today. Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I think it's worth saying that we're at day three into this whole process, and a lot of uncertainty. I think come September, we'll after summer break, we'll have a bit more certainty on how things are going to fold out and what the plans are in the future. And of course, I'll be writing about that and updating our clients as that happens.
Yeah. Thank you, Hugh. So I think we may be at the end of questions for the moment, and I want to thank everyone for your participation and contributions here. I can imagine that over the coming few days will loom, and if anyone has questions you'd like to share over the next few days, we will be delighted to pull a group back together. I'm putting my email address in and would love to hear from anyone. Feedback on today, further questions, and perhaps we'll get another session on our calendars very soon. Thanks to Hugh, Simon, and all of you. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.